All right. Doesn't matter how much school you've had in terms of turning on a microphone, but so. Great.
Okay. All right. So, good morning, everyone. Good morning. My name, I know most of you, not all of you. My name is Karen.
And I'm Richard.
Karen and Richard Hoshino. And we're really feeling pretty honored and nervous to be sitting up here today to share with you. We just moved here. I guess Richard moved a bit before me, end of January. I only really settled in April, so we're pretty new to Squamish. Just feeling really privileged to be here and actually to be up here sharing in front of you. I never thought we would be doing this. It was actually a year ago this weekend, right? Yeah, that we came invited by Richard's Quest. Richard works at Quest University. His colleague Glenn invited us. We are new and just looking for a church. And I said, oh, I go to the River Church, and do you guys want to come? And we're like, okay, cool, that sounds good. So we came, and Tim was sharing that week. And I don't usually, like, cry when I visit a church, but yeah. So there was no sort of pretense or superficiality for me when I came here. I was really touched by what Tim shared, was really vulnerable about his story, and it just really affected me. And he sang this beautiful song called You Are Faithful, I think is the title. Close enough. And God just used his talk to really speak to me. And it was the beginning of what he kind of wanted to do for us. And so it's kind of amazing that 1 year later, here we are, decided to join this church. And it's really just because of the amazing atmosphere at the River that we even feel that we can be sitting up here right now talking to you. We've just felt a lot of just a safe space to be real and be authentic about what we're going through, and we don't have to sort of pretend pretend everything's all good all the time kind of thing. So I really appreciate it's because of all of you that we're able to do that. So I just wanted to thank you for that. And I think I'm going to pass it over to Richard.
Great. Well, good morning, y'all. Good morning, all of you. And so today what we'd like to do is share a story of how God has used you to create beauty in the midst of brokenness after an incredibly difficult last 2 years, and how our journey of healing and restoration has been aided by the people in our families and in our community here. And our hope for today, our very modest hope for today, is that as we share our authenticity and our vulnerability, we hope that somehow God will use these simple words to touch your hearts the way that God has touched our hearts through your authenticity and your vulnerability. And so what we'll be sharing today is a very difficult story of our last 2 years and the tremendous trauma that we had after the death of Karen's sister, Jane, a very difficult loss 18 months ago where she died by suicide after a very, very difficult battle with mental illness. And as we share this story and the journey of loss and grief and anger, bitterness, resentment, we hope that somehow there'll be something in our story for all of you as well. Our story begins in August 2011, just 2 years ago, actually 2 years ago this week, when we attended the wedding of Karen's sister Jane to her husband Andrew, a remarkable, wonderful weekend in Bowen Island, just 30 minutes from here. It was a time, especially because Karen and Jane, their family had a very difficult year, it was a time of tremendous celebration. And it was a dream weekend. Jane marrying the man of her dreams, the wedding officiated by Jane's best friend, Sarah, it was a time of tremendous celebration and joy. And we're actually tremendously honored that Jane's husband Andrew and Jane's best friend Sarah are here with us today. And thank you so much for coming here today. Just before our this wedding at Bowen Island, Karen and I took a three-day retreat to a small town, which we purposely picked because we knew nobody there. And as we were looking on the map, we just decided on a town that was just 1 hour north of Vancouver. And we checked into some B&B, and as we kept taking $15 cab rides between downtown and this place called Garibaldi, and just going back and forth, I remember turning to Karen and saying, oh, I can never live here.
Never say never.
Never say never. So let me pass it on back to Karen.
Yeah, so I just wanted to share just a little bit, just starting with, so my family, we have a history of mental illness and especially anxiety and depression, myself included. So we've struggled a lot, and also my dad too has been hospitalized for depression and obsessive compulsive disorder. And so my family has been through a lot, and I think because of that, that was one of the reasons why my sister and I were really, really close. Because, just when you struggle so much, you either break apart or you bond together. And so we really bonded together. And so she also had struggled with a lot of different bouts of especially anxiety. Leading up to her wedding, there's a lot of course, there's a lot of good things, but also a lot of stress and planning and not getting a lot of sleep, and just a lot to deal with. And so I noticed, you know, she was tired and stuff, but, you know, the wedding was good and great. I mean, amazing. And but I did notice, especially soon after that, into that September, that, things were not going very well, and she was really, really struggling. We were living in Japan at that time, so we came to BC for the wedding, and then we went back to Japan. So I was living in Japan at this time, and so I would talk with her over Skype as often as I could, and I noticed that she wasn't really contacting me as much as she used to, and so I just started to get really concerned, and I would just try and call her as much as I could, and there was just a lot of tears on the phone, and a lot of just a lot of hardship, and I would just often just cry out to God, like, you know, I'm not there. Like, what can I do? You know, I want to hold her and hug her and tell her everything's going to be okay. But, you know, the best I can do is to talk over Skype. And a couple really good Christian friends in Japan, and one of them said, you know, you need to just kind of let go and allow God to take care of her, because you can't be there right now. And I was in the middle of my semester and I couldn't just fly home just on a whim. So I just was like, okay, God, I'm just going to trust that, you know, you're going to take care of her. You're going to take care of her. And so I just kept kind of repeating that to myself. And I had this one really, really hard phone call with her, and she was just crying, and I just didn't know what to do. I just kept saying, like, I love you, I love you, I'm praying for you, I love you, I love you. And I don't usually pray for her over the phone. She usually doesn't want me to pray for her, so I try and respect that. But at this point, I just was like, okay, I'm just going to pray for you over the phone. And so I prayed for her, and just give me a minute. And I hung up the phone, and anyway, and it was about less than a week after that that I got a phone call from my brother telling me that she had died by suicide. And I was like, God, I prayed for her every day, and you're supposed to be good, and I know he doesn't always answer our prayers, but, you know, like, I thought he could have done this, you know. And one of the things that was the hardest for me, I was never angry at my sister. I understood a lot of what she was going through, and when you're in a really dark place, it's really, and you can't see the way out. You know, you have beautiful people around you, but you're just, you know, it's just, the tunnel is just all you can see. The darkness is all you can see, and, you know,
the illness kind of takes over. And so I never blamed her, but I'm like, God, you're supposed to be almighty and all good and all wonderful, and how come you couldn't come through for my family? Because I've heard, we have friends where, you know, the phone rang, or why couldn't somebody have come over right then? Or, you know, I feel like, God, you could have done something. You could have prevented this. And so that was really, really, really hard for me because, that was the last time I talked to her, I prayed for her. And I just really felt like God had really let us down. What's really interesting, in the midst of me being really angry at God, I still remember the first night when I attempted to go to bed. Can you look this up for me? I had this, when I closed my eyes, I actually had this picture. I don't usually get pictures. I'm not one of these people who, like, gets visions and stuff like that. I'm not really like that. And not that that's a good thing, but anyway, I just mean this is not a common thing for me. And anyway, so I just had this picture of this angel wing over me. And then I had this verse that came to me. It's Psalm 34:7. It just says, "The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them." And even though I was super angry at God and I just, like, didn't want anything to do with him, he was still like, you know what? Here I am in the midst of this. And you may be angry and you might hate me right now, but my angels are around you and holding you, and I want you to know that. Thank
you. And so while Karen felt anger and betrayal, I actually felt two different emotions. I felt guilt and regret. I remember this day so clearly. It was October 2011 when Karen and Jane had a very difficult phone call, and I could hear Jane's voice over the computer, the Skype program, and Jane told Karen, "I wish you didn't live so far away. I wish that we weren't separated by an ocean. I wish that you were there because I really need your support right now." And the following day, quite literally the following day, I received an email from a mentor of mine advertising an open math professor position at a brand new startup liberal arts university called Quest. And I had no idea where the heck this place was, and I Googled it, and I was shocked to discover that it was in Squamish, the same little town that we had gone to just a couple of months before. And I felt like at that time it was one of these miraculous God-inspired open doors, and it just felt, we felt such a sense of peace that perhaps this might be the place where we're meant to be, with the hope that Jane and Andrew's future children and our future children could be there, living close by, given that Squamish is just 45 minutes from Jane and Andrew's home on Commercial and Broadway. And so when Jane died, just before I got my interview, I felt such a sense of of guilt and regret for never having told Jane and Andrew that I had applied for this position. I had come in second place in each of the last two jobs that I had applied for, and part of my fear was that had we told Jane, we might be coming, and then for the job not to work out, it might have led to more loss or more regret. And so I remember this so clearly, having a phone interview with Glenn and other members of the Quest Math Search Committee the day before Jane's celebration of life service in Moncton, New Brunswick. And just as I was having my initial phone interview, Andrew walks in the door, and it was just so heartbreaking for me to having to walk down the stairs and tell him that I had applied for a position in his hometown, and I'm sorry I never told you. And in the midst of this tremendous grief, I felt such regret and such a heartache of wondering, why the hell did I just not mention this? You know, it might have not changed anything, but I just felt so much regret of what was unsaid. And in the midst of this grief, the folks from Quest called right back and said, "We want to fly you to Squamish for an on-campus interview." And I asked Karen, just because of what's just happened to us, should I withdraw from the job competition? And Karen made a comment to say, you know, they'll probably be interviewing lots of other people. They probably won't make their decision for another few months. So why don't you just go ahead and then we'll reevaluate and see what happens. And so about a week later, I flew to Squamish, had my on-campus interview. Guess I did pretty well. And I knew the interview had gone well, and the vice president of the university had made a comment to say, we will let you know our decision in a few weeks. And I thought, okay, that's fine, a few weeks, and then by then Karen and I will be back in Japan, we'll have some time to discern and get away and to feel whether this is the right decision for us. And then I flew to Toronto. Karen was flying from Moncton, New Brunswick, her parents' home, the following day, and just as Karen was leaving, I got a phone call from the vice president at Quest saying, we'd like to offer you the job. And then I called Karen, I said, I got the job, and the first words that Karen said was not congratulations or way to go, but I can't handle this right now. And let me pass this on to Karen.
Yeah, so I received a phone call from him. This was my last night I was spending with my parents before flying to Toronto to spend a couple days with his parents before flying back to Japan. So as you can imagine, there's so much going on. And I think at the best of times, trying to make a decision whether you're going to move halfway across the world and leave where you've been living the last, 3 years is a big decision to make. And when you're in the midst of like bombs kind of gone off in your family and you can't think straight and you're dealing with grief and then having to, make this kind of decision is just almost impossible. So I was kind of coming from there and just like, it was never, this is a bad idea or a good idea. It was just, this is too much for me to handle. And this was probably one of the hardest times in my entire life because, of course, Richard and I have had ups and downs before, but it was really hard to be dealing with all this grief, losing, my sister, my best friend, and then my other best friend was like kind of upset at me because I wasn't excited for him for getting his dream job, and I was upset at him because I'm like, you're being so insensitive that, I'm going through this and you can't understand why I'm not excited. Like, what planet are you on? So, it was really... It was really, really hard, and also, his parents were like, this is a great opportunity, don't you think Richard should take this? And I'm just like, I don't really need your pressure right now, I don't need any more pressure from anybody, actually, thank you very much. And so, honestly, like, at that time, I was crying out to God, like, was it not enough that you didn't answer my first prayer, and now I'm, like, in this crazy tension, and I just was like, I am just going to lose it and just have a nervous breakdown. Like, that is what I thought was going to happen to me. I was just like, I just can't keep going. And so anyway, we had a hard time, and after talking to a lot of friends and praying, and we're just like, okay, you know what? We need to ask Quest for more time because, we thought we were going to have more time. So anyway, so Richard emailed them, and fortunately, Glenn and the others are really, full of grace and just like, yeah, just, take some more time. Take the time you need. This is a big decision. And we both really, really appreciated that. And so we're like, okay, let's put this off a little bit. So we went back to Japan, and it was good to have that space between, not being right next to our families and stuff. But the thing with living with a mathematician, there's lots of lovely things. There's also sometimes difficult things. So he's a little bit analytical and thinks in numbers. So he would ask me, what percentage do you think you're agreeing about leaving or not? And I'm looking at him, percentage? Like, are you joking? I said to him, like, if I have peace from God, like, that'll do it for me. I don't need percentages. I'm not thinking in percentages right now. That's just not happening for me. So, I was just, we can laugh at it now, but at that point I just thought, like, who is this guy? Like, seriously. So, and also Richard likes to make decisions quickly. It's kind of like when he knows what he wants to make the decision quickly. And I'm just like, this is a big decision. I don't want to make this decision quickly. So it was a really, really, really hard time. And we really, sometimes I'm just like, let's just stop talking and pray because I just can't continue like this. So anyway, fortunately, we did come to a place where I really felt that
that God was giving me peace, that this was a good way to go. Because I had prayed to God, you know, unless this is like obviously your will, I just don't want to do it. And a lot of you know there's a passage from Exodus in chapter 33. And it's about when Moses is talking with God and talking about the Israelites. And he said, like, you know, we're not going to go unless your presence goes before us. It's, Exodus 33, 14, 15. So God says, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. And Moses says to him, if your presence will not go, do not carry us up from here. And I just kind of said that to God, like, if you're not going, I don't want to be there because, you know, this is all way too much for me to handle. But if we know that your presence is going to go before us and you have plans for us there, then fine, let's just go. And that's all I needed. I'm like, I don't need to know details. I don't need to know where I'm going to be working, where I'm going to be going to church, what's going on. I just need to know that you go before us. And so fortunately, I was able to come to that place, but it was not an easy time for us at all. And fortunately, God also showed me, you know, I'm going to have something for you. This is not just time for Richard, but I'm going to have plans for you as well.
Thanks, Karen. And there's a reason why analytical is spelled A-N-A-L-Y-T-I-C-A-L. Think of the first four letters of analytical and what's up? Okay, yeah, great. Okay. The issue of mental illness is such a stigma in families, in church, in all of society. This is the number one stigma, and yet one in four Canadians will have an experience of mental illness at some point in their life, and yet this is such a stigma. And so when we had originally written Jane's obituary, we took out all the references to anxiety and suicide and depression and all these things. And it was actually Andrew's influence and mentorship who said, no, we will not hide this. We will not be ashamed of this. We will tell our story and we will be honest about this, because if we don't do that, how can we receive healing? And so,
yeah.
And how can we honor Jane and live the rest of our lives to honor her amazing life and her memory? And so we made a very conscious decision after we moved back to Japan, from the time we flew back in March 2012 to the time we moved here in February 2013, that the first Sunday that we were back at our church in Japan, we held nothing back, and we told this 50-person Japanese-speaking congregation that we were completely open and transparent, the same way Jane had been every day of her life. And we explained that for many years, Jane had, that this horrible disease had taken an incredible toll, and we shared our heartache and our anger at a God who claimed to answer prayers but didn't or didn't choose to reach out to Jane when she needed him the most. And so as we shared, half of this Japanese congregation broke into tears, not just quiet sniffling but heavy bawling. And we had no idea why this reaction was so visceral. I mean, after all, nobody knew Jane and they barely knew us. And we heard several people in the back who were at the service for the first time that day, and they were just crying throughout the service. And as the service ended, person after person walked towards us, and we learned that we had given them the space to share their story. One lady talked about losing her best friend to suicide and the pain she had suppressed for 30 years because she was unable to talk about such a taboo subject. Another man described losing his mother, another his uncle. One young lady who became a very dear friend of Karen's during our time in Japan approached her to share the secret of her own mental illness, and Karen was the first person she had ever shared this with, and asked Karen if she could walk alongside her in her journey of faith, supporting each other in every step. Others huddled in small groups, talking amongst themselves, crying openly while eating lunch, holding hands, praying together, and we didn't know what they were saying, but we had a good idea. After all, Japan is a country where 30,000 people die each year by suicide. Millions suffer from depression, other feelings of hopelessness and purposelessness, yet nobody talks about it because the stigma is too great and the people are too proud to openly share. And we have this ingrained church community, not only in Japan, but also in Canada, this sense of, well, if you just pray about it, the mental illness goes away, and that's bullshit. That's not true. For some of the Japanese men and women who attended our church service that day, that finally changed. And so God used Jane's story, combined with our brokenness and tears, to heal a community of people halfway across the world and start the process of setting them free. And we shared the news of Jane's suicide out of a desire to receive healing, but as we surrendered ourselves to God, he amazingly took upon himself the area of our deepest hurt and our deepest pain, using our testimony to restore others, which in turn has helped us in our restoration process. And you know, we're not fully recovered yet, but we're making progress. And God has used grief counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists, books, medication, friends, and family to show us his love and bring us closer to him. And now I have this remarkable ministry as a university teacher where I work with 18 folks who are between 18 and 22. A very difficult time for many young people who are living away from home for the first time. If you know anything about Quest, it's a very stressful and intense place for both faculty and staff and students. And to know, to have had many conversations with students where, because they know our story, they feel that we're a safe person, that I'm a safe person to share their story, and the tremendous privilege that I have now, hearing story after story of a young student sharing their difficulties in this journey of life, knowing that even though I'm not a trained counselor, that I'm a safe person to talk to, has helped me realize that my calling at this small university on a hill is so much more than teaching math. And perhaps we as a church community can do what we can to reduce the stigma of mental illness and the joy of doing that supersedes anything that I've ever experienced. And I know that teaching math is important, but there's something so much more. And part of how we will honor Jane's memory is to devote the rest of our lives to fighting the stigma of mental illness, to never being ashamed to talk about this, and engage in conversations with all of you to do what we can to eliminate and reduce the stigma here in Squamish.
Yeah, and so just kind of coming back to when we came a year ago, especially me, I was feeling really raw emotionally, and it's not really a great place to, you know, when you meet new people, be like, hi, you know, but just because of the atmosphere of authenticity and Tim's story, I was able to talk with him and others, and I remember talking with Glenn, and Glenn's like, just so you know, like, this isn't like a typical service, and I'm like, are you kidding? This is amazing. Like, I loved coming this morning. And so even just that first time, I kind of already knew. I mean, we looked around at other churches after, but I knew, like, wow, you know, if people can just come and share here openly and cry and whatever they need to do, like, this is a place I want to be. And then we ended up, we love our house church, so awesome, and just feel we can really be real and also reach out to the community. So we're really so glad that we are able to come here and make this church our home. And should I give it back to you? Okay.
Thanks. Great. Can all y'all take a look at? Okay. Stop. Can all of you take a look at this handout in front of you called Characteristics of Biblical Fellowship? And we feel so grateful to be part of a simple church, what we call a house group, here at the River. So many people that we see in the audience today who have mentored us and shepherded us. And why we feel so strongly about this is because they have modeled the authenticity and vulnerability that has inspired us to live our lives the way we do now. And if you can look at these 9 characteristics of biblical fellowship, I'm not going to read them all, but can you just look at 1 and 6, please? Number one, you'll see this handout in front of you. Number one is authenticity. We share our true feelings. We don't hide behind a mask. We just share as we are. And number six, humility. Perhaps another word for that is vulnerability. We admit our weaknesses. And we feel so grateful to be part of a simple church here at the River, as well as other friends of ours here at this church who, especially my mentors at Quest, who have been tremendously amazing to me to model these characteristics of authenticity and vulnerability and have helped us grow and mature in this journey of faith. And just before I pass it on to Karen, who will share the last word, I want to just read you a verse from Matthew 25 where God talks about this analogy of the sheep and the goats, and I just want to just read this as a way of saying thank you to all of you. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, "Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was in prison, I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer him. And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it for me." Thank you, River Church.
So I'm just to finish up, I just want to share a little bit of what's been going on for me now since Richard started working at Quest. I've had the privilege of getting to know amazing people here. One of those is Grace Newdorf, and Grace introduced me to the Hospice Society, and there's a bereavement walk that happens. We meet at the Adventure Center, we go for a walk, and then we come back and have coffee together. And it doesn't really matter. I'm one of the youngest ones there. A lot of the other ladies have, you know, lost partners or they're a little bit older. But the fact that I could have a place where I could share, talk about my sister, go for a walk, and Squamish is so beautiful. And the fact that we could just meet and go for walks was amazing for me, just having just moved here. And then we have coffee together, and just having that group where I could just be me and share and get to know people in the community was really, really awesome. And then also, I was able to meet a bunch of times with Kenda. So Darcy and Kenda, for those of you who don't know, are the pastoring couple here. And Kenda is really awesome. She has a counseling background and would just listen to me and pray with me. And she was so adamant, too, to tell me, "Karen, you know, you didn't just come here for Richard. Like, God has something for you specifically here. So never forget that." And I'm just really thankful to her as well. And then also to Linda, who introduced me to, there's like a prayer group, and then also Holy Fit that I went to with Marley and just in the downtown. And like, that was a really awesome place too, to just worship and stretch and just, you know, again, just be authentic and be real. And then also I began taking a basic counseling skills course. So one of the things, all the trauma and everything, it's a lot of soul searching time for me, and I really feel like my passion now is promoting mental health, and as Richard said, reducing stigma and just doing what I can, sharing our story and also just getting some extra skills. So in the fall, I'm actually starting a program at VCC, Vancouver Community College, called the Community Counseling Certificate Program. So basically, I'm going to train to be a counselor, and my background is also working with English as a second language, international students, immigrants, so that would open up doors to work with immigrants or international students or just be with people where they are. And I just thought, what a beautiful ministry to just walk alongside people and allow them to just experience what they need to experience,
You know, not rushing people through things. You should be feeling this way. You should be over this by now. You should be, not at all, just, okay, this is what you're going through. Let's walk through together. Let's pray through this. Let's walk alongside each other. So I just want to be able to be that kind of person. And then also, just through a colleague of Rich's at Quest, I found out there's a new group in Squamish. We're setting up a kind of mental health board, and Kenda's also part of that. And it's basically just trying to provide services for people who can't afford, you know, counseling is really, really expensive. And so we're just trying to put together a group that's also focused on prevention. And I think the name's going to be Wellspring, which is kind of cool because, you know, God's like living water that springs up from us. And it's a beautiful metaphor. So it's been really cool that not only does Richard have a ministry here, I have a ministry here too. And a lot of that has been just through people at this church. So I'm just really, really, really thankful for that. And then this summer I was able to work at the English Language Institute at UBC and just work with a lot of students from around the world and just be able to, just show Jesus' love that way through teaching. So I just wanted to end with a verse from Deuteronomy and to just, kind of testify to, there's still hard days, there's still a lot going on that's difficult, but despite, you know, I don't have all my answers to my questions, like, I don't think I'm going to really understand until, you know, until I go to heaven and see Jesus and he'll explain things to me, but we're in a place where we can see God blessing us through you and through different circumstances, and I'm also just so thankful that that Andrew is living close by, and, like, I'll, like, stay in town with him when I'm in town for work, and, like, just, like, I feel like I have I have a new adopted brother, and that's been a huge blessing for me, and so I'm just so thankful that he's here today, too, as well as Jane's best friend, Sarah. She's awesome, too, and so I'm just thankful that they're here, and so, yeah, I just want to end with a verse from Deuteronomy 32, 10 to 11. He sustained him, or us, in a desert land, in a howling wilderness waste. He shielded him, cared for him, guarded him as the apple of his eye. As an eagle stirs up his nest and hovers over its young, as it spreads its wings and takes them up and bears them aloft on its pinions, the Lord alone guided him. So I just really feel that, God has just really used all these circumstances to show us his grace. It hasn't been easy, and there's going to be a lot more difficult times ahead, but just to know that we can not only grow ourselves, but we can be a light to other people and be a safe place for other people and help other people to grow and to heal, that's been really huge for us in our healing time. So, yeah, I just wanted to thank you again for the chance to share. And I look forward to getting to know you guys better. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I've had the gift of knowing Richard now for 6 months. And I think this is the first time I haven't heard him try to work a math lesson into something he said. Thank you, Richard and Karen. Wow. As I've pondered Richard and Karen's story, the idea of ocean was a word that came to me, of being in over your head. So when Karen says, I can't handle this right now, it's an admission she's in over her head. So I'd like to read some verses from Psalm 18, and in one sense, it summarizes what they've said, but I also read it because I think it's also, I read it as a prayer, a blessing for the way the verse ends there. The Lord reached down from above and took hold of me. He pulled me out of the deep waters. He rescued me from my powerful enemies and from all those who hate me. They were too strong for me. When I was in trouble, they attacked me, but the Lord protected me. He helped me out of danger. He saved me because he was pleased with me. May you, well, Sarah and Andrew as well, may you know God's pleasure. I have a song now.
To share, when Darcy went away, he left this big, long list for all the stuff that we had to do. And one of those things was to make orders of service. Like if you're leading worship, we had to make up an order of service. So I was making up the order of service, and this song I put after the message, I just thought, it's a new song, so it's an opportunity for us to reflect. And I just thought, I didn't know what these guys were talking about or anything. So I sent it to Jim, and I said, can you just look this over and tell me if it's okay? And he sends it back to me, and he says, oh, it's okay. So anyways, you'll get the message. I'm going to play it for you.
My faith would be made stronger. keep my eyes above the waves. My soul will rest in your embrace, 'cause I am yours and you are
Karen and Richard put these handouts on the table with the characteristics of biblical fellowship, but they also put two questions there. And I think originally their intent was just for you to take that home and ponder those two questions. But what I'd like to do is invite you to actually respond now to those two questions. How has God revealed himself to you through someone else's authenticity and humility? How can God use your authenticity and humility to reveal himself to someone you care about? So if you'd like to comment, put your hand up. I'll come with the mic just so that everybody can hear your comment. But invite a time of response. And it's not just to Richard and Karen, but it's to those two questions. How has God revealed himself to you? And how can God use you in your authenticity and humility?
This one, is this on? Okay. This one is about Richard. and this isn't going to be very easy for me. When we first met Richard during the interviews, he's so open and forward and honest and with his faith as well. And at first, because I didn't know him very well, I thought nobody could be like that, really. You know, this has to be an act. and over the course of the interview, we really got to know that he was really authentic about it. And even after we offered him the position, we kept finding out afterwards that he had gone out and was having conversations and helping our students. Even before we'd offered him the job, he was already in a mentoring relationship with about six people. And then when they went through what they went through, we knew that. At least I knew that God was calling us to give them the space they needed, and it was the best decision we ever made. I've gotten to know Richard since then as a colleague. We were really concerned about, we have something really special in math at Quest, and we were really concerned with the new hire that would disrupt that, and it hasn't. It's completely and totally enhanced it. We completely love Richard at Quest. And in fact, we're really excited. I should mention today that we're growing. Our math community is growing today, and Sarah Mays is here for the first time today. So we're really, really excited to have you both here. Richard went through a difficult time in his teaching last April. It's never easy teaching at a place like Quest, where it's very authentic. It's very real and full contact. And I got a chance to be Richard's mentor through that a little bit, and to help him through it. It was the first time I'd had a chance to experience such a personal relationship with someone when they were struggling. That was a great gift to me too, Richard. The tables are turning now. I'm going through a great deal of pain in my life right now. It's not something I can talk about right now, but I'm going through a lot of pain. And God has turned the tables, and I think he's put Richard in my life partly to carry me through. And his humility, his openness, his ability to share his pain has helped me to be able to share my pain with him. And I can see that God has placed him in my life to help me through what I'm going through right now. So thank you, Richard.
I'm just so blessed to be here to today and listen to you share your story of your life. And it's just coming up in another week. It's going to be four years since my sister and I lost my dad. Oh, sorry. And, you know, when my dad passed away, I was devastated, totally devastated. Didn't matter that he was 90 years old, but he was my life, you know. And having never had children, I really felt I was in a really hole, a dark place, you know. I prayed after that. I prayed that the Lord would fill that emptiness, that hole. And I'm just so blessed because now I have a foster daughter who loves me that we can communicate with. And, you know, I'm supposed to teach her, but she's teaching me, you know. We had a little conversation about some deep things, and she made me realize that, you know what, I'm not in that place anymore, that I'm happy, that I've gone through that grief and I've come out a better person for it. And she made me realize that. So here, we're supposed to be mentoring children, but the children are mentoring me. Praise the Lord.
Test, test. Okay, maybe we got rid of the pops. A little bug, another technical bug on a Sunday morning. Well, maybe we didn't get rid of the pops. Okay, anyone else? What becomes clear as we listen to Richard and Karen's story, Jeff's story, yeah, stories from last summer, we all carry a lot of pain, and it's so often we live behind a facade that it's not there, but it is. And so we come to the God of all comfort for comfort, for grace, for healing, or perhaps maybe it's the word healing isn't always the right word. Maybe it's for a chance of reconciliation. Because how do you heal from a loss, whether it's a death of a loved one or some other loss? Maybe it's more like a reconciliation, and that ends up being what Jesus' work was. Reconciliation between each of us, and between God, our loving God. I think we'll pause there and call it a morning. Just two announcements as well. Tomorrow, there is a vacation Bible school that will be starting at the Squamish Community Church, and that starts at 9 a.m. and runs till 12, and that's for grades 1 to 5, and the cost is $30 per child. So it's Squamish Community Church right across from the high school, starting tomorrow, and that runs till Friday. And then just a reminder, the Joy Box is at the back, on the back table there, if you'd like to make a donation, and that helps cover our costs. If you're a guest, there's also guest cards there, and if you want to fill that out and have additional contact from us, please do that. And part of the incentive is that we give you a bean card then, so that you can go to Bean Brackendale and get a free, nice coffee, very nice coffee. I'd like to close with the verse read earlier. What book? Romans 15, verse 13. My phone is slow. May God, the source of hope, fill each of you with all joy and peace by means of your faith in Him, so that your hope will continue to grow by the power of this Holy Spirit. Amen.
You're the God of this city. You're the King of these people. You're the Lord of this nation. You are. You're the light in this darkness. You're the hope to the hopeless. You're the peace to the restless. You are. There is no one like I. There is no one like our God. The greater things have yet to come, and greater things are still to be done in this city. Greater things have yet to come, and greater things are still to be done in this city. You're the God of this city. You're the King of these people.